This week on The World Over, we take you to the Forward to 2000 conference. John Cardinal O'Connor opens the conference with an address on priestly spirituality. And Father Richard John Newhouse gives us his prescription for serving the poor in an authentically Catholic manner. Next on The World Over. Now from our EWTN studios, Raymond Arroyo.
Welcome to The World Over. A few weeks ago, a very special study week was held in New York City. It was called Forward to 2000 and featured some of the bright lights of the Catholic Church. Among the speakers were Cardinal O'Connor, Father Richard John Newhouse, Father Benedict Groeschel, and Michael Novak. There was one problem. The laity couldn't attend the event. It was restricted to priests. Happily, Father Peter Pilsner, who organized the talks, allowed our cameras to catch some of the proceedings. Tonight we start with an address by John Cardinal O'Connor of New York on the challenge of the priesthood and priestly spirituality. Now, though it's directed primarily toward priests, there is much here for the laymen as well. With that in mind, we thought you'd enjoy taking in some of the highlights. The Forward to 2000 conference took place on the banks of the Hudson River at New York's Cardinal Spellman Retreat Center. Cardinal O'Connor was the keynote speaker.
It's the priesthood that is always the challenge, not the changing circumstances, not the poverty or the wealth of the people, not the moral conditions of the people, not the attitudes of the people, not the media. They're not the ones that challenge us. It's the priesthood of Christ himself, and that's immutable. Jeremiah's world was in turmoil. This is why it seems to me our Holy Father turned to him. Jeremiah's world was in turmoil. Idolatry ran rampant, as did corruption, sexual license, and a whole spectrum of injustices. What was God's answer, spoken from the lips of Jeremiah? I will give you shepherds after my own heart to feed you with knowledge and understanding. How many could not see the same turmoil, the cultural chaos, the idolatry, the licentiousness, the injustices of Jeremiah's day in the milieu in which every priest must today live and move and have his being? How many priests or bishops have questioned whether God ever really called them to become priests or whether their vocation was an illusion? Since I have been here, my practice has been every Wednesday, I have tried to be available to the priests of the diocese. I think that I therefore met individually with 700 to 800 priests in my 13 plus years here. I know the number of priests who are very, very happy, very fulfilled, very joyous. And I know the number of priests who are constantly worried still about their identity, frustrated, feeling like functionaries, tempted to leave, understandably tempted sexually, tempted to get married. It can be very difficult. It can be very lonely. Very, very lonely. So many have felt Jeremiah's frustration of preaching to deaf ears. You know, many of us were going off and getting perfectly usable, helpful degrees, but sometimes we began to believe that the degree in a behavioral science or whatever it might be was far more important than our priesthood itself, far more effective, far more helpful to the people. Some 60 years ago, the great Emmanuel Cardinal Seward, the Archbishop of Paris who established the worker priest movement, published the pastoral Priests Among Men. He warned that it could turn out to be the city of God or the city of Satan. Yet this, he noted, was not a new dilemma. That while the circumstances of each day may change rapidly, the priest as priest must remain fundamentally the same. And as we move toward the year 2000, as we move deeper and deeper into our efforts personally, individually, and corporately to evangelize, to preach especially the Eucharistic Christ among us, I think that it's imperative that we recognize this, that the priest is the priest is the priest, and he must remain fundamentally that. Hebrews says Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. And if there's only one priest, and that's Christ, and we share in that priesthood, then it has to be yesterday, today, and forever, always the same. What did Pope John Paul II ask in October of 1995 when he was here in New York? He said, this is a magnificent city. This is a highly advanced city. This is the most, one of the most technically progressive cities in the world. But not everyone here is wealthy. Not everyone lives in a fine house. Not everyone has enough to eat. And I have to ask you, New Yorkers, is there room for the mystery of God? This is where the priest comes in. This is where he has to intervene as an emissary from God above to fulfill the yearning here below of an anguished mankind. He's always present in the church at all times, along with the Holy Ghost. He is the source of her permanence and of her life. Like Christ, the priest is the cornerstone, the foundation block of the heavenly kingdom. Like Christ, the priest brings mankind a priceless good, that of worrying it. He must be the minister of restlessness, the dispenser of a new thirst and a new hunger. Like God, he calls a famine upon the land. The unrest which the priest must spread is the fear of God, that torment for the infinite, which has brought forth such amazing outbursts from the mystics and thinkers of all times. The best way in which we can respond to human needs and to the care of souls in any set of circumstances is to be Christ-like priests. That's always the answer.
When we return, our coverage of the Forward to 2000 conference continues with Father Richard John Newhouse and his strategy for dealing with the poor. And Bill Donahue of the Catholic League has our For the Record segment when we return.
Once again from our studios, Raymond DeRoy.
A large part of Catholic doctrine deals with serving the poor. But how do we serve them with love and justice? What can the Church offer that the poor are not now receiving? These are some of the questions Father Richard John Newhouse addressed at the Forward to 2000 conference. He began with the current situation facing the poor.
We have witnessed a social and moral devastation of such catastrophic proportions that it's even hard to get our minds around the ways to think about possible futures. For but one example, and perhaps the most devastating, over 90% of all the children born were born not simply out of wedlock, but they were born without any adult male accepting responsibility for their existence. The implications of this are truly heartbreaking. We're now into a fourth generation of a very large sector of the population of the United States, our brothers and sisters and fellow citizens, in which children will grow up not only never knowing what it means to have a father, but in most cases not knowing what a father is, literally not knowing any adult male who accepts open-ended responsibility for his offspring. In the mid-1960s, and you can almost specify it, 1965, with the rise of the Black Power movement that challenged the leadership of Dr. King in the Civil Rights Movement, that a whole twisting of both the rhetoric and the conceptualization of social justice took place, With Dr. King, the aspiration always was to engage the possibilities of a people, to envision themselves as being capable of more than what they were doing. If one takes the classic expression in the August 28, 1963 March in Washington, I Have a Dream speech, in which Dr. King prophetically laid out the possibility and the promise of the American experiment. And in a manner that was intended to be winsome and engaging of the American people, to enlist their assent that we had not lived up to the possibility and the promise of the American experiment. It seems to me that the genius of John Paul II, in many ways, is illuminated by that aphorism of Dr. King's. If one looks at the remarkable way in which he's able to relate to people, particularly to young people, it is that capacity to elicit, to evoke an intuition of a greatness that has not been realized. What people need is what cannot be purchased by money. What people need is, and everything comes back to the center again, exactly what the church in its beginnings and at its core always understands, and that is they need love, not the sentimental love of cheap compassion, but what Dorothy Day called the harsh and dreadful love of the cross, of people who will stick with them unconditionally. John Paul II goes so far as to say that the guiding principle, and then he adds, the only guiding principle, very radical statement, of Catholic social teaching is the person and the person in community. The church is not playing catch-up with the contemporary world. It's so important, it seems to me, for us to understand that. In a church in which so many of our, especially, I think, our priests and our religious, women religious in particular, have this strange notion that we're still engaged in some kind of game called catch-up, meaning aggiornamento, that that's really what the council was about, that the council was to get the church up to speed to the modern world. The modern world, as it defines itself, has exhausted itself. We're ahead. We're way ahead. The great insight of the council was not, it seems to me, aggiornamento and the modernizing of the church, but rather it was to lovingly and persuasively help the world to understand, to help this modernity understand, that it has to be open to the windows of transcendence, which is to say, open to the revelation of God in Christ. As John Paul II likes to say, Jesus Christ is the answer to which every human life is the question.
Our coverage of the Forward to 2000 conference will continue next week with Father Benedict Groeschel and Michael Novak. After the break, Bill Donahue will join us for our For the Record segment with a report on how nuns are being misrepresented in the culture. We'll be back in a moment. We now go to New York and Bill Donahue of the Catholic League. This week, Bill has some examples of nun abuse in advertising and the media. Here's Bill Donahue for the record.
Thank you very much, Ray. Today I'd like to talk about, there seems to be a wave of interest on the part of a lot of business establishments regarding nuns and the way they're portraying them. And of course, that's the reason why the Catholic League is upset is because the way nuns are being portrayed and caricatured is not in a way that most Catholics would find reverential. Indeed, there seems to be some kind of fascination about nuns in habit. I mean, the idea that you're going to market products by using nuns as a way of hawking their merchandise strikes us as being a little bit bizarre, and in some cases, we feel that people have crossed the line. For example, I want you to take a look at this picture here just for a moment. This is a picture of a stern-looking nun, stereotypical, in habit, with the rosary beads, brandishing the ruler. And what's all this about? What this is about is selling a cinnamon bun. It was put out by a large chain called Cinnabon. Well, we didn't like it. We took offense. We found out about it through a lot of our members throughout the country. So what happened is that I contacted the president of the company. I must say, in all honesty, I found him to be a pretty reasonable man. And he told me, Bill, he says, give me a few days to talk about it with some of the people here at work, and I'll get back with you. He did just that. And he said, look, I've been in business for 12 years, and Cinnabon has never had any kind of bad PR, and we're not about to get it right now. He said, if you Catholics think that this is a cheap shot, then we are going to regard it as such, too. And as a result, we're going to pull this ad from all of our 350 stores throughout the United States. And the good news, people, is that they did exactly that. So I'm very, very pleased with that outcome. Sometimes people unwittingly do offend us. Another case, a case that you might have heard about even more, is a place in Nashville, Tennessee called Bongo Java. Now, they were putting out a cinnamon bun in the likeness of Mother Teresa. This, of course, struck us much closer to home, which is why we objected. We weren't the only ones. We're very glad to know that Mother Teresa and her lawyers also objected. What they were doing is selling a bun, a cinnamon bun, with the impression of her face and a kind of a likeness and resemblance to Mother Teresa. Now, the picture that we have is not all that clear, but you might get some idea of it. They're also selling a line of products, of coffee mugs and T-shirts, and again, we didn't think that they were treating Mother Teresa in a reverential way. They were parodying her, and of course, she means a great deal to all of us. So we objected several months ago, and the response from Nashville, Tennessee, from the headquarters, was basically to just blow it off. They didn't really care what we thought. So we kept it up, and we advertised in our monthly journal, Catalyst, of our members where to write. And let me tell you something, people. They pulled it. They still are advertising some of the stuff on their website, but they are no longer going to sell this product. Of course, Mother Teresa, whom we love, did step forward on this, as did her lawyers. But when we called Bongo Java, they told us that they had received tons of letters of protest from people, and we are proud that we had a major role to play in that. It just goes to show you what can be done when people put their foot down. There are other examples of using nuns in a manner which is not reverential, and there's a whole series published by Antarctic Press of warrior nuns. One of them is called Auriella, the Shotgun Mary, and Mother Superior. And once again, now this is still out in the market. We find objections to this as well. They've got descriptions of these nuns that are not exactly the way it should be. For example, USA Today has said that the Auriella's costumes are tight-fitting, bodice, thigh-revealing, comparable to the buxom, scantily clad characters found in other comic books. And we've also seen that other people have referred to these nuns as a considerable amount of décolletage and body-hugging. The skirts are frequently split to the waist, revealing leather boot and red underwear. Now, this is the kind of thing, once again, where we are going to object. Nuns mean a great deal to us, priests mean a great deal to us, the brothers mean a great deal to us, and people out there want to make a buck, they are entitled to do so, but they are not entitled, they have no moral right, they may have a legal right, they have no moral right to abuse people of our religion any more than would any other religion. So we feel that we've made some major progress with Cinnabon and with Bongo Java, and we're going to continue the fight until nuns are treated with the kind of respect that they certainly enjoy. This is Bill Donahue of the Catholic League. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
For more information, you can contact the Catholic League at 1-800-355-0980. Until next time, you can reach us with your questions and comments at EWTN News@EWTN.com. Or write us here at the network. Keep those notes coming. And remember, you can find us here each Friday night. But in September, we'll be changing our airtime from 8 p.m. Eastern to 9 p.m. Eastern. So make a note of it. In the meantime, we'll be scouting the world over to bring you all that is seen and unseen. For all the staff and crew of EWTN News, I'm Raymond Arroyo. Bye now. Be sure to catch the re-airs of The World Over Saturday at 11 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, and Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Next Friday, we'll have more from the Forward to 2000 conference. See you then.